This is the Bible Show. Welcome, folks, to another episode of the Bible Show. My name is Sam Kasten-Smith. Joining me today is Will. And today we're getting into a stretch of passage that's kind of wild.
Yeah, back in Genesis.
We're back in Genesis. So many questions come from the stretch of passages, which is going to be Genesis 5, and then the first four verses of Genesis 6 today is what we're hoping to get through. But we're going to deal with why in the world people lived crazy numbers of years. Why? Who are the Nephilim? Who are the sons of God? Like, so if those are questions that you've ever had, and hopefully you have, and if not, we're probably going to leave you with more questions than we answer, because there's some of this stuff that is genuinely a mystery, and we don't exactly know what's going on. But we're here today to kind of dive in and maybe give you some of the best theories that are out there, and to throw out some interesting things. So starting in Genesis 5, what do you think, Will?
Yeah, this is one that most people skip, and we're not going to skip it.
We're going to go through it, right, and try our best to answer these questions. So Genesis 5 is known for being a genealogy, which is why a lot of people skip this one, because it's like, okay, he's the father of so-and-so, and they lived this many years. But the thing that jumps out is they live for a lot of years, which is bizarre. So let's just, at the beginning it says in verse 1, this is the book of the generations of Adam. When God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. Male and female, he created them, and he blessed them, and he named them man, which is interesting because now it's referring to Adam and Eve both, that he's referring collectively to as man. So have you ever been corrected for that in your grammar?
I have not, but you have, I know.
I have. I've written stuff, and it's like whenever I say, you know, the fall of man, it's like you need to say humankind.
Or mankind, or you need to add
to where it's not just man because that's the patriarchy, or, you know, whatever the case might be. And it's like I was reading this, I've never noticed that, but it's like, hey, take it up with God, because he does it right there, and it's singular, and so it's okay. This isn't a slight on either gender. It's just collectively we are the fall of man, man's struggle in life. Like, all of us are in that. When they were created. Verse 3, it says, when Adam had lived 130 years, so immediately you're like,
well, we're thinking he's about to die. We think this is the, like, he's dead. This is not it, though.
So, yeah, he's just beginning his life. He's going to live another 800 years after this. He dies at 930 years old. At 130, what are you expecting? Not this. It says he fathered a son in his own likeness after his image and named him Seth. And you're like,
what took so long?
130 years, which means Eve also, you know, because they're created on the sixth day. Eve is also 130 years old, which means, you know, in today's modernity, like with humanity, like this would be way after menopause, totally impossible. Something is different where Adam and Eve are having children at 130 and are going to continue having children beyond this. But it says he fathered a son in his own likeness after his image, named him Seth. This is the third son that we know about that Adam has. So you got Cain. Yet Abel's been knocked out. Cain's been sent away. And so then you have Seth. And going back to one of the earlier chapters where we talked about this, you know, Eve is promised that through your son is going to come the salvation of the world. Through the seed of the woman, through that line, salvation comes. It's not Cain. He's been sent into exile. It's not Abel because he's been murdered. And so now you have Seth. And Seth's name actually in Hebrew means the appointed one. He is appointed for this. And so it makes a big deal that it's, you know, Adam's son and his likeness and his image. And he's the third named son. But this is something scripture doesn't say. We don't know if they had other sons before Seth. We don't. Certainly they had daughters because they're going to repopulate. That's an uncomfortable topic of all this. There's, you know, who are they populating with? Who are they procreating with?
And so I guess we think that because at the end of chapter 4, you have, you know, Cain murdering Abel, and then Seth is introduced right there.
That's right.
So that's most of the reason why we do that. Just logically, we're just like, well, he's the next one named. He's what we got.
Yep, and tradition says he's the third. In my mind, I always imagine him being the third. But you got to think, okay, 130 years, there's a lot of room in there for other kids to be emerging, unless God just gives them barrenness, which I can't imagine. You know, he says, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. Like,
yeah, he's not going to stop.
Their mission is go have kids. Mm. 130 years, Seth comes. There's probably a whole bunch of other kids that are roaming around. And I think that's why when Seth's name means appointed, it's like among all of them, this is the one who's appointed to bring the line of salvation. So the seed of the woman is coming. This is the appointed line. Seth is going to be the appointed line that brings about salvation, which he's in the genealogy of Jesus.
And I guess that's confusing because Adam's timeline, we have no idea about really.
Mm-hmm.
Because like it's just Adam's created, then the fall happens. We don't know what's in between or if there's anything in between or it's 5 days or it's 5 years or 50 years or whatever it is. That's why when we're knee deep in this, it's like, I don't.
Yeah. And this gets back to the thing. God's not so interested in all the hows. Like he doesn't say, okay, let me put your mind at ease because yeah. I know you're thinking 130 years. That doesn't work anymore. God doesn't give us the answers to this. So, I mean, we're going to throw out some theories today as we talk about it.
And it's crazier that, like, if Adam lived to be 900-something, mm-hmm. to have kids at 100-something, that's, like, the first ninth of his life. So let's say I lived to 80. That's like having a kid at 9. So in reality, that's it's right. Like, no, he got to it pretty quickly. If you're lasting 900 years, getting after in the first 100's pretty good.
So this is where some of the problems come in, because people, they want to, like, explain this away, which is the natural impulse. First thing I ever did when I came across this was, like, there must have been different calendar systems.
Yeah, so like 3 days long.
Instead of it being, you know, 365-day year or the lunar calendar with 360-day years, maybe it was, you know, the lunar calendar was a year. And so, you know,
Adam had his own calendar. Days.
Or some other calendar that we don't know about. But the problem with that is when you scroll down, you find, you know, like Mahalalel, who is one of the people in the genealogy, has a child at 65. Well, if let's say instead of 900 years, it's really 90 years, so it's a tenth. That means he's having kids at 6. So that doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So yeah. You can't take the calendar and try to make sense out of it, because then you have children having children, and you can't have that. That makes crazy. No sense either. And so Adam is out of the gates living 930 years, and then he died. And then so you just read through the lineage that's going to Noah, which, by the way, is also the lineage that's leading you to Jesus. And let's just look at, we're not going to read this whole chapter, but let's look at some of the longevities. You have Seth, who lives 912 years. You have Enosh, who lives 905 years. So, okay, that seems to be right up there. Yeah, Kenan lives 910 years. Mahalalel lives 895 years.
Well, he wasn't healthy.
That's right.
He wasn't exercising.
He must
enough.
Have smoked or something. Jared lives 962 years. Then you get this weird guy, Enoch, that all of a sudden lives at 65 years old. He fathers Methuselah, who's going to be the longest living one. And we're told Enoch walked with God, and after he fathered Methuselah 300 years and had other sons and daughters, thus all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And then it says this line, Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Now, all the other expressions say he lived such and such a time, and he died, and he died, and he died, and he died. And Enoch, it's he walked with God, and then he was not, for God took him. And so a lot of people, me included, say that Enoch didn't die. He was taken up into heaven by God in much the same way as Elijah. So who's taken to heaven in chariots of fire and never experiences death, which opens up all kinds of questions too. And it's like the Bible doesn't say, okay, now let me explain this to you. We're just told that he walks with God, and walking with God is associated with not suffering death for some reason, which is like, okay, did any of these other people walk with God? Like we know Seth did, obviously, and we know that some of the other people did. But for some reason, Enoch is set apart. And he walks with God like Elijah, and he's taken into heaven without dying.
Does anywhere else mention this guy?
You do see Enoch get brought up. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 5, which is the Heroes of Faith chapter, it says, by faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. Now, before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God.
That's helpful.
So there you go. So it's saying, Enoch, God is modeling that faith avoids death and it pleases God. So He walks with God. So that's the goal. It's setting that goal for us early.
And Enoch's just gone one day. What a wild case.
You imagine, really imagine that. And then Methuselah comes. He's the one who lives the longest of anybody. It's 969 years. Then he has Lamech, and Lamech lives 777 years. And then comes Noah, and he's going to live a crazy amount of time. And so then the question is, and by the way, Methuselah, if you do the math on him, he lives 969 years and dies in the same year as the flood. What do you do with that?
I don't know.
Either God waits for Methuselah to die.
And he's like, flood time.
And he's like, okay, now that Methuselah has, you know, he died in peace or whatever, now I'm going to bring about the flood with Noah. Or there's a flood, Methuselah's not in the ark. He's rebellious, and he dies due to the flood. And there's theories on that as well. So this is one of those chapters where you can chase so many different ideas of why in the world is this the case.
And just confusion.
But when you think of people living a long time, what is it that jumps to your mind that's like, okay, this is how I make sense of it in my brain, or do you?
I just don't think I make sense of it.
Okay.
That's one of those ones I think I just avoid because I'm not sure.
I don't think anybody can be sure.
I think too long about that, I just get more confused and it's not helpful to my brain.
Yeah.
Because like even it says like Noah was 500 years old and then he fathered his kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a crazy number.
Yeah. That is a crazy number. And it's just thrown out there. And some of the interesting things, let me see if I can bring this up. If you go back in ancient cultures, so this is something that's fascinating. Like when you think Fertile Crescent, one of the oldest civilizations that we know about, the Sumerians, all through the Fertile Crescent, they have a stone rectangle thing that's called the Sumerian King List. And on that, it says this, 8 kings, and this is even crazier than the Bible's years of age. It says 8 kings reigned there 241,200 years.
Wow. That
right?
math doesn't add up.
And some people think that has to be mistranslated. Maybe it comes down. But even with the mistranslation, it's still an insanely long time, longer than the biblical lives. But listen to what it says. You had these people who lived incredibly long periods of time. The next line, the flood swept thereover. And after the flood had swept thereover, when kingship was lowered from heaven, the kingship was in Kish. And so in this king's list, this is how they define time. There was a time before the flood. And in their mind, regardless if they get the math wrong, obviously, people lived an incredible long period of time. Then there was a flood, and then people lived relatively normal lifespans. That fits, right?
Makes sense.
So with the Sumerians, they're like, yes, we have generational memory that people used to live way longer than they do now. Then there was this terrible flood, and now things are fairly normal. And you find those same patterns around the world. Like, if you go around and you look for people who lived a long period of time, there's a guy named Peng Zhu in Chinese mythology who lived several centuries. Or there's Epimenides of Knossos who lived for centuries. Or Dengun of Korea who lived almost 2,000 years. And I'm sure these are mythologies, but there's something in humanity that says the old, the ancients lived a long time.
Yeah, if I write a character, it's okay that I make him 600 years old. That's not a crazy thing.
In their mind, they're like, that's the way it used to be, regardless of whether these are real people or whatever. Jamshid of Persia lived for 7 centuries. Etana of Kish lived for 635 years. So in all these cultures scattered around the world, you've got these people who lived long. Now, is that generational memory? Is it pure mythology craziness? I don't know. I really don't know. So then the question becomes like, okay, if they lived this long, because when you get to Genesis chapter 6 and verse 3, it says, let me quote it correctly, but it says that God reduces the age to 120 years. Can you read that? Do you have that in front of you?
Yeah.
Genesis 6:3.
He says, my spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years.
So God all of a sudden comes down and says,
there's that.
I'm not doing this with humanity in this particular state forever because man has fallen, his flesh is corrupt. the only thing that we gain by allowing him even to live as long as he does in a broken world is more pain, more wickedness, more evil. So I'm going to start abbreviating their lives. And so you see that in Genesis 6:3. And then the question becomes, why does God? And by the way, interesting little factoid. Do you know in the Guinness Book of World Records for the person who's lived the longest in the United States, do you know what the age was?
120.
Close.
Oh, I just thought you set this up more perfectly, man.
Almost perfectly, but it's a lady named Sarah Knaus, and she lived to be 119, and that she died, you know, within the last couple decades, I think, but couldn't break the 120 barrier.
So no one in recent history has broken 120.
I feel like there has maybe been, but it's not in our country. I know the record for us is 119. But if you do find anybody who breaches it, they're dead soon. You know, that's, you know, you're not, that seems to be the cap, and people don't go beyond that. In fact, the average life expectancy is in the 70s, late 70s. But you see 120s, like it becomes the, what seems like the absolute cap for humanity.
And was that like Moses was 120 exactly?
Yeah, Moses will be 120. Joseph will be 110. Once you get beyond Abraham and Isaac, you see the ages, they just come down precipitously. And that's one of those questions where it's like from Genesis 5 to, you know, midway through Genesis, now all of a sudden you're getting fairly normal lives. So there's different ideas as to why that changed, and I think they're fascinating, and we're going to throw them out and I don't know if they're true, but here we go. Ready? The first one is a direct spiritual judgment of God. God says, I'm not going to contend with your flesh and how rotten humanity is.
Yeah, you guys keep getting worse every year.
The longer you live, it's just like you become more miserable, more bitter, more ugly. So let's abbreviate this, you know, and put you out of your misery in a sense. And let's bring you to either glory or not. But this is just prolonging misery.
You didn't mean ugly physically. We don't hate old people.
No, I didn't. I mean the heart
ugly
and the soul.
Spirit. Yeah, I just didn't want us to bash any old people.
And by the way, like the longer you live and the more abilities you have, the more capable you become of even worse things. So is it the direct spiritual judgment of God? I think, yeah, to some degree. But then there's other people who come and say, after the flood, one of the things you see, the world just goes through this incredibly, incredibly cataclysmic event that radically rocks the world, puts humanity near extinction. Everything about the earth and its environment and everything else, we're told, kind of goes through a change. After this, there's going to be carnivorous diets and everything else, different plants, whatever. So some people say maybe it was dietary changes that happen. That one's less convincing to me. I don't love that one. Another one that I think, oh, maybe, is a change in the atmospheric conditions. So a lot of people think that God used, you know, comets or meteors slamming into the earth. One of the theories that we'll get into in our next episode has to deal with what's called the Burkle crater, where a meteor slammed into earth and would have caused, for sure, massive flooding right around the time when you should expect Noah's flood. And the way that scientists have described this would have radically changed our environment, our atmosphere, the metals that are in the air that we breathe changed, all the makeups changed. And so did the environment change around us to where it reduced our life. And God used that to bring around shorter lives, possible. Changes genetics, though, which is kind of interesting because, like, women don't produce enough eggs to have children at, you know, at 130 years old
anymore.
That's
interesting, yeah.
So something changed with genetics, too. The next one is the impact on human immune systems, right? So you have this cataclysmic event, and it began, like, we start wondering today, there's all these theories on why are we getting more cancers? Why are there more people diagnosed with this and that? Maybe it's our diets. What's going on with humanity? Why is the fertility rates plummeting? Why is sperm counts falling in men? Like, all of these things are going on, and everyone's like, why is this happening? And no one has a definitive answer, but there's all kinds of theories. Well, same thing, except at a much bigger scale. Like, something in the world is shifting that's wrecking humanity and making them less fertile for less periods of time. So do human immune systems take on some kind of damage? We don't know. This is the one that I think is the most compelling to me. is if you, and this was published in the journal Nature, there is a phenomenon that's fascinating and no one knows exactly what to do with it. But if you go back and you map, you know how you can send off your DNA and it comes back 23andMe or Ancestry.com or whatever, and it can tell you where your ancestors come from. Well, they can map, going in reverse, where all of humanity comes from and all the different places, you know, South America, North America, all that. And they find that when you go back about 7,000 years ago, there is an intense bottleneck of male DNA.
Huh.
Females, not as drastic, but like all of the male DNA bottlenecks with Noah. And then he has the three sons that all carry his genetic diversity.
But it takes a while to fan back out.
And so if I were to tell you, you know, we talk about, you know, Adam, how does the world repopulate after Adam and Eve? Well, it has to be their children, which is uncomfortable. But like, unless there are other people that God created that are not quite of the line of Adam, which introduces a whole lot of problems. And by the way, we know that all of humanity today does share a common ancestor. So it's not like, oh, you know,
we all share
a common mother. We know that for certain. So in this, you have this genetic bottleneck with all the men, and what happens when you lose genetic diversity in a species?
It dies off.
It dies off. It becomes extremely sickly. It's the reason why, like, if first cousins today, if they have children, what tends to happen?
A whole lot of problems.
You get a whole lot of problems. We've got parts of the world now where you have immigrants coming, where you find a lot of first cousin marriages, and it's producing, like in England right now, massive numbers of health problems with the migrants coming there because they're marrying and procreating with their cousins, and it produces tons of problems. Their death rates and everything else skyrocket. All the genetic problems come about, and it reduces life expectancy. Well, we're told that there is a genetic bottleneck, that the only man, after all of the diversity that came out of Adam, is now, and we're back to Noah. That genetic, the genetic material that's lost from these other lines that might have yielded health, are now concentrated to Noah. So, like, here's an example. They recently did studies on one of the Neanderthal man, and they found that Neanderthal man had a significantly superior immune system to modern man. And so, I mean, let's just say, I'm not making this case, but let's say for the sake of argument, Neanderthal man is one of the people lost in the flood, right? And he had this superior genetic immune system, everything else, and he's lost. And just Noah carries on. What if Noah had kind of the womp-womp genetics of the crew and you lose all the superior genetics? I mean, I think that, or just the fact that the loss of diversity is going to make humanity weaker going forward, that fits to me with this major cataclysmic flood, right? Like, life expectancy, absolutely. I don't know that I don't know the science and all. Know it would drop for certain. That's a scientific principle, dropping to where you're not living 900 years and it comes down to 120. I don't know how all that works, but I know that that's one of the principles that's thrown out there. So you've got all these competing theories that all suggest that life expectancy should have dropped dramatically.
And that makes sense. I mean, after a huge worldwide flood, like, yeah, things changed.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Things change. And when things change, it affects us as humans health-wise.
That's right. And the reality is, when you go back to the beginning, when he designed Adam and Eve and he designed the world for them to live in, how long were they designed to live?
Forever.
Forever. And so even with the fall, where death creeps, spiritual death, and they're kind of separated from God and death is ultimately looming, they're still created with all the capacities in the natural realm, equipped to live forever and to procreate forever and to fill the earth and do all those things. And so you have this idea that God made us to live forever, so you shouldn't be surprised that right after that, you know, man's life expectancy is still astronomical, but 900 years in comparison to everlasting is quite the demotion. And then we get demoted again in our life expectancy after the flood. But that shouldn't shock us that Adam and Eve, if God genuinely had made them to live forever, are living exceptionally long times.
Yeah, because the corruption of sin and the earth took them from forever to 900, mm-hmm. which makes sense.
And in Genesis 6, in that verse 3, before he brings about the flood, God makes the announcement, I don't like that. I don't like that they're living 969 years. The corruption that's coming, the pain that's coming to the world, what they're doing to one another, all of the things that we're going to get into even more in the next episode when we talk about the Nephilim and the sons of God, like it is becoming too painful. And in a sense, it's a mercy where in verse 3, he announces, I'm going to bring about some kind of change on the world that's going to bring this back to where it's 120 years, the sufferings of man, the miseries of man, the evils of man, like we're going to cap it at 120. We're going to get on with the story of redemption. And I think that's a mercy, because if you in a fallen nature with all your fears and anxieties and everything else, if God came to you and says, you know, instead of 80, you could live to be 950. How would you feel?
I'm out.
Like, no way. Like, I don't want to do that. Like, take sin away. Take evil. Take the corruption. Take the anxieties and the fears and all the other bitterness and everything else that creeps in and the jadedness that comes with old age. You know, if you could take that away and restore innocence to me and joy and give that an abundant magnitude, then may and my health and my bones aren't hurting. And
yeah, it's kind of like, what kind of life are you living?
Yeah, like if you could give me a life that's free of all that, then I'd want to live forever. But in this world, like this, I don't want to live 950 years and be around all this sadness and everything else. Like, so I think God in his mercy comes and says, like, I'm going to cut it short. And you see the same heart of God. Like, remember when we're in Genesis chapter 3? Like, why would God shorten their age? Oh my goodness, wouldn't a loving God want you to live? No, not if it's like this. Yeah. Remember when he stations the cherubim by the tree of life and says, you know, keep them from eating of it lest they live forever? Already right there, you see the heart of God. He wants you. He wants you to live forever. He wants you to live forever in righteousness and peace and all of these wonderful things. But if it means living forever, eating from the tree of life in a corrupted state and living forever like we are right now, self-absorbed and broken and all the fallen nature, God's like, I don't want that for them. Mm. And so the same heart of God that says put a cherubim to keep them from living forever in sin is the heart of God that says even 950 years, this is misery on them. And it's making the earth even more rotten. Like, we're going to go a step further and bring that down to 120. And that was a mercy. Like, I'm grateful that that happened.
Have you heard of a guy named Brian Johnson?
No.
Okay, so he's this guy, I've only seen him on YouTube, but his whole thing is longevity and trying to live forever in a sense. But he's trying to extend the age from whatever, 70 to, and he does all of these crazy things. It's called the Blueprint Protocol or something. I think he's selling products now, so you can buy them if you want. But it's crazy the lengths he's going, like spending millions of dollars a year. He's the most tested man on the planet because they're always running tests. He's always putting stuff on and trying out new approaches. But as you watch the video, it's kind of like, the opposite of what we're saying, where we're like, no, take us. We're fine. Yeah. We're good. But to watch a guy struggle and to be so disciplined and work so hard just to add extra years. Like, he eats this, like, porridge for lunch every day because it's got the perfect amount of nutrients and everything like that. So it's just interesting that even men today are like, no, I don't care what God says. Like, I'm going to manufacture this in such a way that I'm going to live.
And you already know how that experiment ends, right?
Like, I mean, he dies for sure.
He's going to die.
Or even just like a car crash. Like,
you're right. You can't bubble wrap your whole life and make, like, death is going to take, I mean, unless Jesus comes, death is going to grab you. Like, no matter how much you strive, no matter how hard you work. All right, I'm seeing a picture and he's wearing a shirt that says don't die.
I think he has a website called don'tdie.com or something.
You're going to die, dude. I promise. But think of all the slavery. I mean, that might be a great illustration for us to end on, because that's the nature of man right now. We're in a broken world. We got broken souls. We're self-absorbed. And there's something in us that's like, I've got to figure out how to live forever. I want to find purpose. I want to find meaning. I'm going to try. And some people do it through diet and exercise. Obviously not me, but other people are like, you know, I need to do this. I need to do this. And nobody wants to confront their mortality that says, you know what, no matter what I do. I mean, that's the curse of Genesis 3 is you're going to sweat and you're going to deal with thorns and you're going to strive and you're going to have to do all this stuff for your bread. And at the end of the day, no matter how hard you try, guess what? From the dust you were taken to the dust you will return. And there's no amount of striving that's going to save you from that. And God, on the other hand, is saying, okay, take all your efforts and your don't die campaign and everything else. That's a fool's errand. Mm. You're going to die because God's too merciful to let you live in a broken world forever. Right? And over here, you've got God who's come with an alternative plan for you that says you can't rescue yourself. You'll never live forever on your own. And in a broken world, you never want to. But I've sent my son. And my son has come into this world not just to redeem you, to redeem your body, to redeem your heart, to redeem your soul, to make all things new in you. And not just you, he's come to redeem the world, to become a place that you would want to live in. There's going to be a new heavens and a new earth and a new Jerusalem. Behold, I make all things new. And that's absolutely critical, one, for us to be able to have everlasting life, but two, to have an everlasting life that you would want to live. Mm-hmm. Where things genuinely are always growing in joy and always peaceful and evil is removed and your body's not in rebellion and falling apart and the world's not at rebellion with you. Like, everything comes together in authentic, what the Bible calls shalom. That's the pathway. In a broken world, the life, it's like God's ebbing it away from the beginning. Like, you don't want to live forever here. And yet Christ comes and says, I offer everlasting life and a world and with giving you an inheritance that's worth having.
Yeah.
Which one do you want?
Mm,
you know, good. I don't want to be Adam living 950 years in this world. No, thanks. Like,
and we're pretty sure we were texting about this, but all the stuff that's going on in our world, we're like, how much longer is this going to go?
Right. Like, come Lord Jesus.
Bunch of drones everywhere.
Yeah, you look at the Bible, and that's John. Like, some of the last words he says is, come, Lord Jesus. Why? Because even John, even the apostles that are living lives that are full, that have abundant life, that are filled with love and the fruit of the Spirit, in a broken world, it's still hard.
Mm.
There's still heartache. There's still evil. There's still conflict all over the place. That you see it. You feel it. It wears on you. Your body begins to fall apart. And John's like, check, please.
Yeah.
Like, Lord, I want to be with you and I want to see what you do for me and this world to make it all better. And God's on a mission to do that. So I'm grateful.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. One more thing before we wrap up. Forgot to mention this. But there's a lot of people who argue that there's a name code in Genesis 5. Anytime you hear code in Bible, it's like alarm bells go up. But the names that are mentioned in that genealogy, they are interesting in the way that they fall, and a lot of people have taken notice of this.
And every Hebrew name has a meaning, unlike ours, where, like, when you hear Will, it doesn't mean anything to you.
Correct, or at least not in modern English.
Yeah.
It probably has some root that meant something at one point, but most of it's lost. Like, Samuel actually does mean something.
That's because that's from the Old Testament.
And it's Hebrew. Thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome.
So here we go. Adam, let's go through the names. Adam, Seth, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah. What their names mean: man, appointed, mortal, sorrow, the blessed God, shall come down, teaching, his death shall bring, despairing, rest. So now, put all that together and try to make a sentence out of it, and this is what people do. Okay, you take those different names. Man is appointed to death and sorrow, but the blessed God shall come down teaching, and his death shall bring the despairing rest.
Mm.
What's that sound like?
The gospel?
Yeah. So it's in these names as they're laid out. If that's intentional, then that's pointing. The line that these people lead through will ultimately be the genealogy of Jesus, and even the names themselves are telling the story of the gospel.
I mean, they have to be, because you go from Mahalalel to Jared.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Why we got a Jared in there?
But it really, you know, shall come down, like, that's pretty cool.
It's awesome.
That would be pointing to Jesus. So in the midst of, and this is something that God does that's kind of a cool thing, that in the midst of tragedy, right? So you've got, you know, God is shortening ages and we're leading to the flood and humanity's getting worse and worse and worse. And yet through this, God's sovereign poetry, he's writing a message of hope in the middle of the ugly. Mm. And that's just, you know, he's so good at that. He's the master of making beautiful things come from the ashes. So anyway, before we signed off, wanted to share that as well. So anyway, we're gonna stop there, and we're gonna pick up next time in chapter 6. We're gonna introduce our theories on the sons of God and the daughters of men and the Nephilim. There are all kinds of theories out there, and some of them have some really compelling points and some things that are uncomfortable, and we'll jump into that next time. God bless. Thanks for listening to The Bible Show. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to like and subscribe and leave a kind review to help us in the world of tech algorithms. Also, feel free to share with a friend. We'll see you next week with another episode of The Bible Show.